ever get that like sinking feeling, you know, when a contract just feels completely off, like you're stuck in some crazy fine print situation.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Well, that's kind of what we're diving into today. This case where a guy named William Lewis, he almost lost his property down in North Myrtle Beach, all because of like one missed payment,
Ooh.
even though he had been paying, get this, for years.
Wow.
It all went down in a case called Lewis v. Premium Investment Corp.
Okay.
And it really makes you think about like, where's the line between following a contract to the letter and, you know, just basic fairness?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a really key question. And what makes this case so interesting is that, you know, back in the 70s, Lewis was buying his property through one of these installment land contracts,
Okay.
which were pretty common back then. But unlike a typical mortgage, these contracts, they didn't really have any kind of safety net for buyers who, you know, maybe fell behind on
So
payments.
no room for error,
Yeah,
basically.
you miss a payment, you could lose everything.
Wow. So take us back then to what happened with Lewis. I mean, it sounds like he was like pretty close to owning this property outright, right?
Right. So picture this. 1970 stems. Lewis enters into this contract to buy a piece of real estate in North Myrtle Beach.
Okay.
He makes these payments diligently for 12
It's
years.
12 years.
But then, for whatever reason, things happen. Life gets in the way. He stops making payments.
Okay.
8 years later, he tries to catch up, right?
Yeah,
Makes sense.
right.
But the seller basically says, nope, too late. You've forfeited your rights to the property.
Oh man. That's rough. I mean, 12 years of payments, that's got to be a significant investment.
It is. It's huge. And that's actually the real kicker here, because Lewis had actually paid a substantial chunk of the total price for the property.
Oh, wow.
But because of this thing called a forfeiture clause in the contract,
Uh-oh.
he was at risk of losing everything.
Wait, hold on. A forfeiture clause? What is that
Okay,
exactly?
so think of it this way. You're putting years of payments into your dream car, right?
Right.
You miss just one payment.
Uh-oh.
A forfeiture clause basically says, well, the lender can repossess the car and they keep all the money you've already paid.
Oh, no.
It's designed to protect the lender,
Right.
but it can be incredibly harsh, obviously, on the buyer.
Yeah, that's a nightmare scenario.
Yeah.
So when this went to court, like what happened? Surely the judge like took into account all those years that Lewis had been making payments,
Well,
right?
you'd think so, wouldn't you? But it wasn't that simple. So a lower court initially sided with the seller. Just strictly upheld the terms of the contract. But then the Court of Appeals, they actually reversed that decision.
Oh.
They said that Lewis did have some rights. They recognized that he had something called an equitable interest in the property. And that's where this idea of fairness comes in.
Okay, so equitable interest. So that means that the court was basically acknowledging that Lewis wasn't just like some random guy who suddenly wanted this property. He had actually like put in the time and money.
Yeah, they were saying, look, just because the contract had this strict forfeiture clause doesn't mean that it's automatically fair to enforce it.
Okay, this is getting really interesting. So did it end there?
No, not a chance. This case, it went all the way up to the South Carolina Supreme Court. And like the whole legal world was kind of watching this case because the central question was, can a court actually use its power, like the power of equity,
Okay.
to actually overrule a contract, even if the terms are super clear? So really, like, how much weight does fairness carry in a situation like this?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. Can we back up for a second though?
Yeah.
You keep using this word equity. What does
Yeah.
that actually mean in this context?
Sure, yeah, good question. So imagine this. You accidentally overpay a bill, like by $100.
Okay.
Legally, the company, they might not have to return that money, right?
Right.
But equity kind of steps in and says, hey, wait a minute, that's not fair. They should give you your money back, even if the contract doesn't specifically say so.
Right.
So it's about reaching a just outcome, even if it means going beyond just like the super strict letter of the law.
Okay, so in Lewis's case, they were trying to decide, like, is it fair to enforce this forfeiture clause, even though he'd been paying for so long?
Exactly. And the thing is, the South Carolina Supreme Court, they didn't just give a simple yes or no.
Okay.
They created a five-factor test.
Ooh, a five-factor test.
Yeah, to help determine when it's okay for a court to actually use its power of equity in these kinds of cases.
Okay, five-factor test. That's really interesting. So, What are these factors, and how do they apply to Lewis and his property?
Well, that's where things get really fascinating, and that's what we're going to dig into next.
Okay, so you've totally got me hooked with this five-factor test.
Oh, good.
What exactly are we talking about here? Like, what are these factors that help a court decide, hey, you know, this contract, yeah, maybe it's legal, but it's just not fair.
Yeah, it's a pretty brilliant approach. So the first thing the court looked at was how much had the buyer actually paid towards the property?
Okay.
And in Lewis's case, remember, he had paid a really, like, a substantial chunk of the total price.
Right.
So that meant that he had a lot of equity on the line.
That makes sense. I mean, if someone's only paid a little bit and then they default, maybe it's a different story. But Lewis was, I mean, he was practically a homeowner at that point.
Right, exactly.
So what's the next factor?
So the second one, it kind of digs into the past a little bit, looks at the history of missed payments.
Okay.
And the court really scrutinized that 8-year gap where Lewis stopped paying.
Right.
They wanted to figure out, like, what were the circumstances surrounding the default? Mm-hmm. Was there a legitimate reason, or was he just being negligent?
Okay, so they weren't just looking at, like, cold, hard numbers.
Right.
They were trying to understand, like, the story, the context.
Yeah, exactly.
So factor number three, what do they look at there?
Well, so this one gets really interesting because they actually compared Lewis's prior payments to what he would have paid if he was just renting the property.
Oh, okay.
So they were trying to see if his payments, if they actually exceeded what would be considered, you know, fair market rent.
I see a pattern here. It seems like they're trying to, like, figure out if the seller was actually being harmed in this situation, or even maybe even, like, profiting off of Lewis's, you know, I'm reading that right?
You are spot on. The court was basically trying to figure out, was the seller really suffering a loss, or were they, like you said, maybe even better off?
Right.
By actually enforcing this forfeiture clause. So it's really about kind of balancing the scales, making sure that one side isn't unfairly benefiting at the expense of the other.
Okay, so we've got amount paid, reason for default, comparing it to the rental value.
Yeah.
What about the last two factors?
Okay, so the fourth one focused on whether Lewis had actually made any improvements to the property. So, like, had he done anything that increased its value? Because if he had, you know, losing the property would mean an even greater loss for him.
Right. So it's not just about the money he put in directly, but also, like, the sweat equity.
Yeah.
Any work he had done on the place.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Makes sense. Okay. All right. What's the final factor?
Okay. So the last one looked at how well Lewis had actually maintained the property.
Okay.
During that time when he wasn't making payments.
Oh, interesting.
So, you know, did he take care of it? Did he keep it in good condition? This really showed, you know, his ongoing commitment to the property, even during that period of default.
It's like the court was saying, hey, we get it. You missed some payments. But did you still act like you cared about this place? Like it was yours.
Right.
And that could actually, like, you know, potentially work in his favor.
Precisely. They were trying to get a sense of the whole picture of his relationship to the property, not just focusing on, you know, that single missed deadline.
Okay. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So this five-factor test is really fascinating.
It is, yeah.
So tell me, how did the Supreme Court actually rule? Did they say that Lewis could keep his property?
Well, they didn't just give a simple yes or no.
Okay.
They actually overturned the lower court's ruling, and they sent the case back down with instructions to, you know, apply this new five-factor test.
Okay, so not a complete victory for Lewis, but not a total loss either.
Right.
But it sounds like a pretty big win for the, like, you know, the idea of fairness in contracts in general.
Oh, yeah.
This five-factor test, I mean, it seems like it could really change things, right?
Absolutely. The court was making a really clear statement here. They were basically saying that these strict contract terms, they're not always the be-all, end-all.
Mm-hmm.
They recognize that equity has a crucial role to play in making sure that things are even when it comes to contracts. And this decision, it's actually had a huge ripple effect, influencing how other courts all over the country deal with similar cases.
So this wasn't just about Lewis and his property.
Yeah.
It was about, like, establishing a legal framework for how to think about these situations.
Yeah, how to protect buyers from unfair forfeitures.
That's pretty remarkable.
It is, yeah. The court basically said, hey, you know, sometimes just rigidly sticking to the letter of the law, it just leads to results that are just plain wrong.
Right.
And in those cases, the courts, we have responsibility to step in and make sure that justice actually prevails.
I'm guessing this case has had a pretty big impact, specifically on installment land contracts.
Yeah.
Especially since, you know, you said they used to be so much stricter than traditional mortgages.
You're absolutely right. By bringing in this idea of an equitable right of redemption, the court really kind of blurred the lines between installment contracts and mortgages, which have always given more protection to the buyer.
Hmm.
It's a pretty big shift. It recognizes, you know, there's this inherent power imbalance in these kinds of agreements.
Okay. This is all incredibly insightful. But before we go any further, I want to circle back to something you said earlier.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that this case has had an influence beyond just South Carolina. Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how far-reaching has its impact actually been? So we've talked about how this case wasn't just some like local real estate thing. It's had a much bigger impact beyond South Carolina. Can you give us some examples of how like other states or other courts have used this Lewis case to, you know, to deal with similar contract issues?
Yeah, for sure. The Lewis decision, it's been cited in a ton of cases all over the country, often in situations where you've got a buyer who's, you know, facing the possibility of losing their property.
Mm-hmm.
Because of a really strict contract clause.
Okay.
It's become kind of a landmark case, you know, yeah, for courts that are trying to figure out that balance between like holding people to their contracts and making sure things are actually fair.
So even though it started in South Carolina, its influence has really spread,
yeah,
throughout the legal system.
Yeah, it really has. And it shows you how important precedent is in the legal world. You know, when a court makes a decision, like in Lewis, it sets a standard.
Right.
And other courts can look at that and say, okay, well, this is how we should handle this kind of situation.
So it's like a ripple effect.
Exactly. And it highlights the fact that the law is always changing. It's adapting to new circumstances, to new ideas about what's right and wrong.
This has been a real deep dive. We went from like what seemed like a pretty simple real estate dispute,
yeah,
to this like huge exploration of contract law, equity, and like, you know, the whole legal system, how it works, how it changes.
Yeah, it really shows you that the law isn't just about like rules, black and white. It's about trying to come up with just solutions that take into account all the different factors, all the circumstances, and the bigger picture of what's fair.
Yeah. Well, I think it's safe to say we all learned a lot today.
Yeah.
Especially about how important equity is,
mm-hmm,
to sort of balance out those times when a contract might be really harsh.
Definitely. And for anyone listening who, you know, might be dealing with contracts themselves, especially if it's about property.
Right.
The Lewis case is a good reminder. Always, always read the fine print. Understand what you're agreeing to.
Yeah.
Be aware of those potential traps.
Right.
Like forfeiture clauses.
Right.
And if you're not sure about something, talk to a lawyer.
Great advice.
Mm-hmm.
Knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when it comes to legal stuff.
I totally agree. And remember, even though contracts can seem really intimidating, the law is there to protect everyone.
Yeah.
The Lewis case, it shows us that the courts are willing to step in to make sure things are fair, even if it means, you know, going beyond just what the contract says, word for word.
This deep dive has given us a lot to think about. Thanks for joining us. Until next time.